Theater of the Mind.
In a previous Hauntcast, I mentioned a phenomenon called pareidolia, in which a specific definitive image or sound is incorrectly identified from random or unrelated input. It's interesting to note that often these imagined images and sounds are human in nature. We look at clouds or rock formations and see faces, and we hear human words form in the garble of reverse-played recordings, animal sounds, and background white noise. Many neurologists see this as evolutionarily significant and related to our survival, as humans are social animals by nature, and we will always seek contact with others of our own kind. If our natural tendency is to humanize everything from the sides of cliffs to the swirl patterns in our cream of wheat, it's no surprise that we see ourselves in other animals. It's easy to do. Many animals cry, for example, or cuddle, or play, or bellow at each other and fight non-lethally just to establish who's the bigger badass. These are all universal behaviors that serve the same purposes across all species, but for some reason, we prefer to anthropomorphize the animals and gift them with human sentience rather than just admit that despite our additional complexity, we're animals too. It's common to use animal comparisons to describe ourselves and others. People who follow along unquestioningly with popular opinion are seen as sheep. A wolf in sheep's clothing is a predatory person who appears like a harmless kindred soul to an intended victim. Meanwhile, gun rights and self-defense advocates have taken to likening the armed citizen to a sheepdog, a benevolent canine that possesses the same fangs and predatory capabilities as the wolf, but only uses them against the wolf in defense of the flock. In a bizarre loop of self-absorption, we project our own personality traits onto animals, then use the animals to represent those traits and assume their identities to suggest that we're as noble as them. Cheeky little primates we are. No matter what direction we look in, ultimately, we always end up gazing at our own reflection. Shamanistic religions historically used animals as totems, representations of certain people's traits and spiritual beliefs. These bits of animal symbolism have become deeply ingrained in the human psyche all around the world, even in societies where shamanic and pagan influences were long since displaced. And the deeper something goes in the human mind, the better it is to exploit when looking for emotional and instinctive triggers to tweak. And as haunters, that's precisely the sort of thing we like to do. Halloween is a veritable zoological cornucopia. Rats, spiders, bats, black cats, snakes, and wolves are as much a part of the season as witches and jack-o'-lanterns. But lest we fall victim to the dreaded haunted yard sale syndrome, it helps to ponder what the presence of certain animals actually suggests and use them in a way that adds meaning and continuity to the scene, theme, and backstory of the haunt. If we want to tell a story and set a mood and atmosphere, just scattering critters and other props around randomly wastes much of their full potential. Let's consider bats. If you're going the old traditional Gothic mansion route, you're dropping the ball if you don't have at least a few bats around. Nowadays, bats are commonly associated with vampires, but this is actually a pretty new phenomenon. The vampire turning from human form into a bat was actually originated by Bram Stoker and not present in any of the Anglo-European folklore. That's because there are no vampire bats in that part of the world. They all live in Mexico, Central, and South America. But bats can be found in folklore and pre-Stoker Gothic literature because they have long been, not surprisingly, associated with darkness. They fly at night, so, like owls and whippoorwills, they long ago became associated with shadows and the spirit realm. Also, if you look at them close up, their facial appearance can be a bit unnerving. Granted, a few species actually do resemble cute little puppy dogs and teddy bears, but many, if not most, are actually kind of scary and ferocious-looking, like miniature wolves or demons. Finally, bats and pigeons take up roost in greatest numbers when there's no one around to shoo them out, so the image of swarms of bats circling the towers and turrets of the manor suggests an air of neglect and decay. Colonies of bats hanging from the ceilings in appropriate areas look great in a haunt, and there are some very cool motorized ones that flap their wings and fly around in circles on a tether overhead. Just make sure they're separated enough to not tangle each other. On that topic of neglect and decay, nothing says this house is going to hell in a handbasket quite like a good rat infestation. Man has been at war with rats for centuries, and for good reasons. They bite, they spread disease, they chew through damn near anything, they breed like, well, rats, they devour food stockpiles, and they're harder than hell to wipe out. And, like their smaller relatives, mice, they will destroy household furnishings not only in the search for food, but for nesting materials as well. In the haunt, rats look best when supplemented by evidence of their destructive habits. Holes chewed through baseboards, piles of loose stuffing poking out from the sofas, nests, decimated food storage areas littered with scraps and droppings, and so on. The ruin brought by rodents sends the same message as creeping ivy, vines, and cobwebs. This place is being overtaken little by little by the chaos of the natural world and is no longer fit for mankind. Snakes also make a lot of people uncomfortable, and many are outright phobic of them. In truth, only a minority of snakes are poisonous or dangerous to humans. Most are actually quite beneficial. But most people will stay far away from a snake if they don't know for sure it's one of the good guys. Mummy, voodoo, and Western-themed haunts especially seem to call for plenty of snakes, and if you can afford an animated striking one to mix in with the statics, they're always good for a scare. In a haunt, when animals are distorted in some way, such as changing their size or morphology, it can put that element of the uncanny into play, blending the familiar with the just plain wrong. But it helps if there's actually a reason for that in the haunt's theme. It might seem logical that if a rat or bug is creepy, a giant one will be more so. But the impact is greater if that distortion is put into some kind of context. In a sci-fi-based haunt, for example, it may be a mutant or ghastly hybrid of some sort. Or, in a supernatural theme, something created by a witch or demonic corruption. Granted, in the time-constrained world of a haunt, spectators may not take conscious note of these things, but the overall continuity of the haunt benefits when everything makes some kind of sense in the grand scheme. It makes the atmosphere that much more polished, adding to the overall enjoyment. Animals don't even have to be live. In the gothic mansions of film and stage, we've all seen the libraries and trophy rooms of the big game hunter, crammed with taxidermied bears, elk, lions, and so on. These rooms creep people out on principle, and I don't think it's just the idea of being in a room full of dead animals. These displays make a telling statement about the lord of the manor having more regard for pomp and pageantry than for the preciousness of life. This isn't Pappy Zeke heading into the hills with his scattergun to put food on the table for Ma and the young'uns. This is a wealthy aristocrat obsessed with killing the biggest animal he can find just so he can pose it in his study and pat himself on the back for his prowess. It's usually posed in some ferocious fighting stance to show how mighty its killer must have been to defeat it, even though the poor beast was probably just getting a drink of water or squatting down for a poop when Lord Puffington sent a 50-cal round crashing through its lungs. Next to velvet tapestries and oil paintings, nothing puts across that Hammer Films-like representation of the arrogant, insular, morally decayed aristocrat like a big-game trophy room. Animal symbology in the form of heraldry and decoration can also be used to comment on the nature of the story's human characters. Certain animals are associated with certain traits, and if a person is identified with such an animal, it makes a statement on that person's character. Cats are mysterious and observant. Bears are strong and fierce, dogs loyal and dependable. Characters known for these qualities, or who wish to be seen that way, would choose personal coats of arms with these symbols. Likewise, those emulating those qualities might have lots of statuary and other artwork of such animals in their decor. J.K. Rowling made extensive use of this totem-style character identification in her Harry Potter books. The heraldic devices of the four households, the choice of familiars of the witches and wizards, and the identities of the Patronus spirits that protected some of the characters were all reflections of the individual's personalities. These animal symbols hinted if the character were brave like a lion, sneaky and dangerous like a snake, or, in the case of the character nicknamed Mooney, prone to becoming a wolf in the full of the moon. Which brings us to the most iconic juxtaposition of animal and man, the werewolf. Werewolves in folklore and literature come in different flavors, some changing form at will, some uncontrollably when threatened or enraged, and of course those changing with the phases of the moon. The lunar lycanthrope is often a tragic figure, because even a good-hearted and peaceful person becomes enslaved by their horrible fate, unable to control the evil and savagery of their transformation, with only death as a release from their curse. The werewolf symbolizes that terrible darkness and violence that can lie hidden in human nature. Wolves are not the largest or deadliest creatures on land in terms of the individual, but they are still formidable and terrifying predators. They're intelligent, stealthy, fast, attack with unbridled ferocity, and travel in well-coordinated packs. And their calls, those eerie, mournful howls, echoing and answering through the chill night air, are like the voice of doom. Reminding man that the unrelenting, deadly spirit of nature is everywhere and will never be tamed. And that trademark howl is but one example of the fact that animal presence is as well represented by sound as by visuals. Growls or panting from beyond the shadows can be even more unsettling than seeing the source. The flapping of bats' wings, the scrabbling of rats in the walls and rafters, the snarling of hounds, even the crickets or frogs in the waters of the motor swamp, all of these add a wonderful richness to the ambient soundtrack of the haunt, helping to set the stage for a truly immersive experience. There are many people in the world, ranging from aboriginals to simple frontiersmen, who live side by side with wildlife all the time. But those of us raised in polite society prefer to think of our structures and dwellings as inviolate, home only to us and the pets or livestock we invite inside. This is our world, damn it, and we like to be in control. But, like the invading roots of trees and ivy, infiltration by critters and beasts seem to indicate that the inexorable advance of nature is gradually reclaiming the monuments to our labor and civilization. And unless we stand ever vigilant to fight, repair, and rebuild, eventually we lose. And when the situation is reversed and we are in their territory, we truly begin to feel our vulnerability, as our highly developed minds do not always give us advantage over the savagery and sheer numbers found in the animal kingdom. That combined fascination and mistrust of the untamed wilds runs deep in the spirit of the civilized human, and the exploitation of those deep, unspoken fears, like the forces of nature itself, can be so subtle and primal that it almost seems unfair to do so. But then, as the one doing the fear-mongering, you have no intention of playing fair now, do you? You animal, you. From the Theater of the Mind, I'm Revenant, and you're listening to Hauntcast.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunted Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.